When Jesus heard the news about the death of John the Baptist, he withdrew from there in a boat to go to a place, deserted place, by himself. Upon hearing the grim news of the death of his cousin, executed, he withdraws to a deserted place. Of course, by the time he gets there, it's no longer deserted. There's a great crowd. We read that Jesus has compassion for them and cures their sick. We know how the story goes. It's a famous story in the Bible. It gets late. People are hungry. The disciples demand that the crowds leave, go into town, get something to eat, send the multitudes away. Jesus commands them to feed the hungry. Of course, the disciples then wonder the obvious question, how are they to feed so many with such scant resources? 5 loaves and 2 fish, not enough. Then the tension in the story. Jesus takes what, for all practical purposes, appears like very meager resources, and there's enough. And perhaps most significantly, there is more than enough. There is an abundance, a huge amount. When Jesus heard about the death of John the Baptist, he withdrew. This is a story that happens right before this. It's a different banquet. It's a different feeding. Herod's feast, though, was not a feast with the multitudes. It was a select guest list. It doesn't happen in the wilderness. It happens in the palace. No large crowds at all. Herod's there. Herod's wife, Herodias, is there. But according to Jewish law, she shouldn't be there, for Herod had stolen her from his brother who was still living. And John dared to speak out against this unlawful liaison, and he ends up in prison. Thus, the banquet given by Herod. There's the story of the dancing girl, a rash oath, the desire of an angry and powerful person. Then Herod gives the command, and soon the head of John the Baptist is brought out on a platter, as though it was the last course in the meal. It's a very different kind of banquet. It's a banquet of death, not the abundance there at Jesus' feet, this banquet of life, not 12 baskets of stuff left over, but just the horrifying leftover of John, head on a plate. After hearing this news, we read, Jesus goes to a deserted place. The crowds, they follow. Thousands gather. They're hungry and night has come. What to do? What does Jesus do? He takes what they have. He blesses it. He breaks it, and he gives it to the disciples who give it to the world. And wonder wonders, it's enough. More than enough. Did you notice Matthew says all ate and were filled? They took up what was left over, 12 baskets. Jesus blesses, he breaks, and he gives them bread to eat. Of course, we get the echo of another meal that'll happen a little later in the story. Here we get the same invocation. Jesus looks up into heaven. The sort of need that Jesus meets here comes nothing short of that as divine gift. Of course, that meal at the Last Supper is nothing short of divine gift. The meal we gather with together here shortly is nothing but divine gift. So we have this contrast. First, we have scarcity in the face of great need, contrasted with this extraordinary, this abundance of gifts offered at the hand of Jesus. And then we get death and a rash oath, an image of abusive power, and we get living bread on the other side. Again, two very different banquets. But did you notice the story just doesn't end with, well, they all ate. They all had some nice bread and went home, and it was nice. There's this little word in here that and they were filled. They were satisfied, not just temporarily satisfied, but something deeper, something more meaningful. And there's 12 baskets full. It's not only fulfillment, but it's a surplus. But as one person at the Wednesday Bible study put it, it's a frivolous, wasteful surplus. All that bread's going stale. Not going to get eaten in time. It's wasteful. Why not just provide enough? Why extravagance? But that, doesn't that remind you of all these sorts of stories that Jesus tells, where it's never just enough? It's always extravagant, perhaps even unseemly so. We had a few weeks ago the farmer who cast seed here and there and everywhere, good soil, bad soil. Seems extravagant and wasteful. Why not be careful? Why not just enough? Why too much? Or again, wine runs out at a wedding. What does Jesus do? He turns water into wine, but not just enough, just for everybody to have a little. But according to John, 180 gallons. It's extravagant. It's wasteful. Wouldn't a simple sign been sufficient, been enough? It's almost too much, an overabundance. Or again, the wayward son, the prodigal, returns to his father. Father could have said something nice and give him a little bit of a welcome. But instead, it's a huge party, an extravagant party. Large gifts to the worthless son. It seems wasteful. Jesus tells the parable of a boss who calls the employees together, gives them everything he owns. To one he gives a half, who doubles it. To one he gives a quarter, who doubles it. And to the prudent one, perhaps even the practical one, who takes what he's given, buries it, gives it back to the master when the master returns. The boss is mad, angry at the cautious and prudent employee, and instead sort of revels and celebrates the extravagance of the one who wheeled and dealed and made more. All these stories where enough is not enough. It's more than that. It's miraculously huge, beyond comprehension. Today we just got 5,000 people who ate their fill. Of course, the only miracle story to appear in all four Gospels. And in some sense, of course, foreshadows, as Lewis read, the great banquet at the end. Everyone who thirsts, come. Come to the waters. You who have no money, come, buy and eat. The story of death juxtaposed with a story of life. But it's all a foreshadowing for that banquet that is a banquet of life and death, right? A banquet where Jesus gathers on his last night with his disciples. It's in some sense a banquet of death. This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. This is my blood shed for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And then he'll be served up. But it's not just his head. It'll be more than that. The head was sufficient, but his body will be lifted up. It will be crucified at a banquet of death. At that last banquet, they're all there. He orders food for all of them. He takes bread, he blesses it, he breaks it. He doesn't exclude any of them. They're going to turn him in, desert him, run away, hide, scatter to the four winds, cower in a room together, and he'll never turn them away. Just like he never turns the crowds away. They sit down, they eat, and all were filled. On Easter, then, this banquet of death is overturned. This is my body given for you. This is my blood shed for you as we gather together. We eat, we partake. We are his sort of 12 baskets full. We are the abundance that's left over, the abundance that continues, the miracle that goes on that he offers us in bread and cup. Jesus takes bread, blesses it, breaks it, and gives it to us all. It's this cup and bread is the union with God. When we take this cup to our lips, we accept a gift, an extravagant gift, more than we need kind of gift. It looks tiny, but it is nothing short of miraculous. It's a reminder that we don't live for ourselves. We live for the one who created us, who makes us new, who has come to us out of the tomb. We live so that all the world may know that in breaking bread and living together and dying and rising, Christ has given us more than we could possibly imagine. Not, of course, by anything that we have done. Those 5,000 gathered, the good, the bad, and the otherwise, the disciples, the good, the bad, and the otherwise, it's nothing that we have done. But because Christ has loved us, called us his own, brought us to this feast, died that we might have life, rose that we might have it abundantly and have it eternally. Thanks be to God. Amen.